translation. Being very pleased by the unalloyed devotion to Maharaj Ambarish, the Supreme Personality of Godhead gave the king his disc, which is fearful to enemies and which always protects the devotee from the enemies and adversities. Purport. A devotee, being always engaged in the service of the Lord, may not be expert in self-defense, but because a devotee fully depends on the lotus feet of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, he is always sure of protection by the Lord. Prahlad Maharaj said, Naivo dvije para duratyaya vaitaranyas tadvirya gayana mahamrita magnachitah Srimad Bhagavatam 7.9.43. A devotee is always merged in the ocean of the transcendental bliss of rendering service to the Lord. Therefore, he is not at all afraid of any adverse situation in the material world. The Lord also promises, Kanteya pratijanihi name bhakta pranashyati. O Arjun, you may declare to the world that devotees of the Lord are never vanquished. Bhagavad Gita 9.31. For the protection of the devotees, Krishna's disc, the Sudarshan Chakra, is always ready. This disc is extremely fearful to the non-devotees, pratyanika bhayavaham. Therefore, although Maharaj Ambarish was fully engaged in the devotional service, his kingdom was free from all fear of adversity. What actually adversity is, like opposing elements, or fear, okay, danger and stuff. Thank you very much. Okay, when I was reading the verse, is few basic points Srila Prabhupada mentioned here. So I just decided whatever sticks first with me in the mind, I'll talk about that. So there's one. Actually, there is one apparently kind of point which we don't think much about, but is very important. It's basically all pervading. So basically, just to ask a question, what is the most prevailing nature of this material world? Say again? Ah, no. There's something more subtle. Ah, no. No. Not element in sense, but energy or very substance of this material world. No? No? I'll give you a clue anyway. Spiritual world is called Paravyom or Vaikuntha. Kunta, exactly. Anxiety. Prabhupada talks a lot about fear, basically. When you start to dig about that, is basically all our existence is comprised of that. Either to be fearful or endeavor to be free from fear. So that's kind of topic I was mostly going through here. Kunta. Kunta means anxiety or fear, basically. Worry, all kinds of negative things which we don't like in our life. Which spend so much endeavor to kind of to conquer over. Okay. So fear from what, basically? It's better to ask fear from what not in this material world. So fear is basically bodily concept of life. We all have to agree to that, you know. Fear that something gonna harm my body or mind, this is more subtle. You know, I will be in inconvenience. I will, basically everything related to this body, more or less. Basically, fear from loss of something. That's mainly, you know. So soon as we come to this material world, these anxieties start to creep in, basically. From our pure consciousness, soon as we come to this material world, its very nature is called Kunta anyway. So it's a fear in so many varieties. Although Prabhupada said that most dangerous type of fear is that there's nehavikramana shosti pratyaya na vidyate svalpam svapamasya something apidharmasya trayate mahatobayat. This, what's the translation? There's no fear of anxieties. Even a little advancement on this path towards Krishna can free one from most dangerous type of fear. So that's a kind of one of the first instructions in Bhagavad Gita, in second chapter, I think, somewhere. That's basically where Bhagavad Gita really starts, instructions. So, yeah, that was, yeah. So anxiety is creeping soon as we come. So why is that? Because eternal has taken shelter of temporary. That's a cause of fear. We are eternal soul, we have taken shelter of temporary things. So this also proves that we are eternal, because something within us just rebels against end, against loss, against harm, because our very nature is Satchidananda, always blissful, eternal. There's no fear there. So that's a kind of one point. Like sometimes people say, there's only one life, basically. The life is not eternal. I don't have a soul. When this body dies, that's very often you meet people on the street like that. So, and then when you ask them, do you afraid of death or dying? No, I'm not afraid. That's a kind of foolishness. If, for example, this building next to you would crash down, you're going to run for life, definitely. Or car, if it runs into you, or some madman with a knife runs towards you, you will definitely, But when is everything nice, it's a nice day, everybody's peaceful on the street, and I'm all right, I have some little bit money in my account, I have a roof over my head, I'm not starving, there is a policeman there, hello policeman, how are you doing? So I'm okay, I'm not afraid of that. But in adversities, then it's a different story completely. All this goes out of window, basically. So underlying principle, this material world, is fear, basically. Prabhupada was right. On the end, I'll speak about some, how you call this? I don't know, we'll talk this a little bit later. So basically, in psychology, there is quite often that people have strong fear of death, basically, and dying, is when phobias. How to conquer fear of death? And there is many ways, they try to pacify them or give them some hope. Somebody is really locked into that fear of death. They cannot even function in this material world, basically. So everything boils down that basically birth is a normal cycles of life, and death is also a normal cycles of life. You cannot do anything about it, you cannot change. So accept, very simply, it's just kind of cycles. Those who are more religious, of course, they refer them to their own scriptures. When you die, you're going to go back to God. There's no question of mentioning hell or something else. You go to God, so there's nothing to fear. If you don't believe in God, then of course that's just natural cycles. Your body is recycled, but actually something in us rebels so strongly, even regardless of those therapies, but why? Same like, for example, if a child, you cannot understand some points you try to stress, and you say, but this, listen, my child, this and that, and the child just doesn't understand, but why? Just crying, you can understand. So in the same way, our soul within crying, why? It's just, why have to die? Because it's not our nature, basically. That's a kind of some glimpse of our eternity. Otherwise, if this world is temporary, it would be just a normal part of life. Nobody would be afraid of death or dying or danger, basically. So this, be accepted. But it's just, nobody likes to die, even aunt or anything, because we are eternal, basically. And under conception of false ego, we have taken shelter of temporary things, which are going to break, see. So, also, can you recall in your, for example, own life, when you got this information, But actually, you are not temporary, you are eternal spirit soul. At least, you know, not maybe having deeper understanding of that, but this just information. Wow, I'm soul, and there is no death. I'm eternal. This basically, most of us have starting point in spiritual life based on that. It's basically, you can say, most happy moment in your life, basically. You know, because, you know, this fear of death is just pressing like a, you know, behind. If you can feel breath of death, you know, every moment. So when you start to ask questions, why? And then when you get information that you are eternal, you are the soul, you never die, you change the bodies, such a relief. Wow. That's the starting point of your spiritual life, basically. Like, let's say, yogis spending many lifetimes to come to this understanding that they are not this body. But Bhagavad Gita teaches you right at the beginning that. So, while we are still on bodily conception of life, even as a devotees, we have to go back to Bhagavad Gita, basically, and chew on until you can digest. Because you cannot be free from fear, anxieties, all adversities, until you pass to this point of realization that you are not this body. It's so important. And how many lifetimes needs that? But still, we are lucky to have this information right in the beginning, basically. So again, the point, eternal has taken shelter of temporary, basically. So how then could be lasting peace in this world, lasting happiness, basically? So first we make sure that nothing harms this body, that we have sufficient means to maintain it. Basically everything is focused on this body. And especially one thing which is kind of a touchy point, but we try to maintain our youth as far as possible. That's actually one of the most, basically strongest disease which is attached to this body, basically. Try to be eternal within this body. Again, symptom of the soul is eternal. So we try to be eternal, but this body, try to maintain it as possible with proper diets. You know, try to be, stay young as possible. See, once I wrote a poem to my brother. It was his birthday, basically. And sometimes I write some wacky poetry, brahmacharis, know that. So I wanted to just write something unique, something which all, both of us know of some, you know, experience together. And at the same time, to point out some things on a mild way, basically preach, and also something funny. First idea was to make something funny. But I'm afraid I missed the target because he would be upset, I think, you know. I didn't spend so much time as a devotee, you forget that people are just very sensitive about that. You know, I kind of sometimes work the points, so for me it's nothing, but people get, move away. So, I mean, I wrote on creation, but basically it's about bodily concept of life and how we are dragging these bodies, rotten bodies, through all universe, basically, up and down. There's this kind of topic, like, you know. Title was Same Rotten Me, basically, something like that. So, of course, I have to write some short purport after, you know, to kind of smooth things out. My brother is a devotee, he's very nice, he's, you know, I'll mention him later on. But still, attachment is there when you're in material world, you know, to make sure your status, your appearance, your, you know, you know, that's a kind of touchy point. Let's, you know, talk about cosmetic industry. Sorry for that, but anyway. On the street, you can see, like, people, when you approach the people somehow, you talk to them face to face, you know. Then you can see, you know, their real appearance. Anyway, from distance, like, they look so gorgeous sometimes, shiny and beautiful, but when you talk to them from close, you can see all imperfections. And basically, sorry to say, but very often, if it's not always, the faces are plastered with makeups, basically, to cover all these cracks and spots and you know, it's kind of, you can see in the corner of their eyes insecurity. You sometimes have a feeling it's talking to the mask, and you see eyes behind, kind of fearful. Not just ladies, but very often even men, more and more, you know, try to maintain your body, try to, you know, smooth it up, you know, your appearance. Basically, anyway, cosmetic industry makes millions out of those who are fearful, out of those who are so much on bodily conception of life. Unfortunately, even, you see this even in the devotee's case, you know, what to do. Basically, first of all, whatever I speak here is meant to hammer me, basically. As I said, I'm one who is on bodily conception of life and talk to myself, so don't take this as some kind of hammering point. It's a me, you know. And when you talk, you have more chance to follow. That's my actually attention. I wouldn't sit here, actually. You know, I've been listening for so many years, and all talks I forget during the breakfast, basically. But when you talk, it's a different thing. It kind of more reflects, so I just beg the blessings to finally start to follow, at least in some degree, my talks, that's all. So that's one point without upsetting anyone. I advised one person, actually. It was an old lady, anyway. She was plastered, as I said, with makeups, you know. It was more scary than, you know. I know we talk sometime, but then on the end I say, listen, you know, just allow yourself to get old. You know, just allow yourself to get old. Can't stop anyway, whatever you do. You know, just allow, you know, without any endeavor to do anything, to stop, to cover it up, to slow it down. Accept yourself. And once you do this, you see big burden comes out of your chest, basically. You know, it'd be snatched away from you. For example, in the case of devotees also, in materialists, anyway, like Hare Krishna, what means? Please engage me, body, senses, in your service. But chanting, in one sense, begging to come off bodily platform, and at the same time maintaining bodily platform, is contradictory completely. You just hold on to something, you just go through your fingers. Will disappear, basically. Yeah. So soon you give, as you give up that conception, it will be much more easier to move on, basically. Otherwise, it will be snatched away from you anyway. So what's the point? You may pray, Krishna, take me off bodily platform and at the same time holding on your body, and Krishna may not interfere, basically. Or he may interfere, but we will not like it at all. That's at one point. So just on touching about that, because we are on the bodily platform, I am on the bodily platform, you know, and then we have to progress and give up these conceptions and hammer on again, basically. So next, something about mind. This is an important thing, because even mind has taken shelter of this fragile body, basically, even mind. See? There's anxiety in the fragile body. See, the same, like, for example, I don't know, you attempt to build some flying device, whatever, and you don't want to spend any money, you have some material in your workshop, you know, and you know it's not perfect, basically, but you want to use whatever you have. And you may have perfect plan to build the machine, and you finally made it, and you take off even, you know, but there is always anxiety. You know, this may crash, my material is not perfect, you know, it's a fear. So in the same way, you take shelter of this body, it's going to crash, it's a fear. Jai Shri Shri Radha Gokula Nanda Padita Pavana Ki Jai. So it's imperfect machine, basically. It's subtle. There's anxiety. So in the same way, like, anyway, just to mention the side point, when we were on the rafting with Parashuram on the Ganga, in the Himalayas, basically. My goodness, this was just madness, basically. But we had, you know what dinghy is? Dinghy is basically boat. Two balloons, basically, more or less, connect together with some platform on the top. This was our boat for rafting on the, like, very extreme raft on white water in Ganga. And definitely, it was anxieties, basically. You know, it was like two balloons smashing on the rocks. And many times we were washed off and in white water, capsized. Some of the devotees had even near-death experience. You can talk to the crew. You know, Arjuna's wife nearly died. It was so dangerous, you know. So this was imperfect boat, imperfect means to do things. This is something you not to do twice, basically. To do once and not mess with Mother Ganga anymore. But in the same time, you find a pleasure out of it. It's some adrenaline flows, like, you know, I don't know, it's special rasa. So we are kind of tend to turn all negative things in this material world into sort of pleasure to survive. You know, like we have this, whatever, extreme sports, but basically, you know, anything. Like my brother, the same brother, I wrote this poem. He runs the club for extreme sports, basically. And they really do mad things, you know, like skydiving, extreme mountain biking, skiing in extreme situations. Crazy. Once he told me, he said he was skiing on a place which only mad person would do. It was it's kind of in a small town which I'm born, basically. There is a, like maybe about a few, maybe 1 mile. There is a huge hill, and in, at the base of that hill is a base is kind of cut off, and buildings are built there, you know. So, but above that there's a huge hill, very steep, and sometimes it's very snowing there in winter, like 2 years ago. And they were skiing there, this extreme skiing, you know. Basically, there's nothing there. You ski, and it's a cliff. You know, and so who can come closer to the cliff, with, you know, without dying, basically. That's all, you know. It's crazy when he told me. He said it's a mad thing, but just this adrenaline kind of makes you go again and again and again. And it did once, not anymore. It's dangerous. So these people kind of like to get a rush out of this extreme danger. You know, just a side point anyway. So basically, mind also has taken shelter of this body, and mind is the lord of the senses. And mind uses the senses to express itself and find a pleasure in this material world. So kind of, it's topsy-turvy situation, basically. How is that mind comes on the top of intelligence, when in general is different? Because mind, and then intelligence, and then false ego, and our very self. So that's a reflection in material world, basically. And basically, under influence of false ego, mind enslaves the intelligence into making plans for sense gratification in this material world. And intelligence is there strongly under the rulership of the mind, basically. See, there's no choice almost. You know, you need... Everybody had a temptation to do something it shouldn't do, basically. Intelligence can cry, don't, but mind kind of enslaves the intelligence down because it's agitated to gratify the senses. And then enslaves intelligence, okay, devise the plan, how can I get what I want? You know, and basically you are helpless, like on this picture in Bhagavad Gita. Horse, you are there sitting helplessly, your intelligence and mind is whipping the horses, you know. That's the situation. So mind gets strength from false ego somehow. And it's interesting thing, you know. There's only one thing we have to conquer in this material world is the mind. Nothing else. That's the only thing which stands in, on the way of liberation, basically. This ninth canto is called liberation, so it's kind of a touching point. It's only mind, basically. In Bhagavad Gita, Krishna doesn't say, he said, but he says, when one conquers the mind, the super soul is already reached. You know the verse. Jitatmana prasantasya paramatma samahita shitoshna sukkadukeshu tatamana pamana yo. For one who has conquered the mind, the super soul is already reached. For he has attained tranquility. To such a man, happiness and distress, heat and cold, honor and dishonor, they are all the same. Krishna doesn't say one who conquers the ego, super soul is reached. Or doesn't he say one who conquers the body or senses, super soul is reached. But he said just only one thing, the mind. As soon as you conquer the mind, that's it. Because nature of intelligence is to be spiritual. not the material. So as soon as you conquer the mind, it's not anymore ruler of the intelligence. Then intelligence resumes its pure nature, and you're in touch with spirit soul. It's very intelligent, very important, sorry. Because in spiritual world, there is no mind. It doesn't exist there. See? It exists here. And the role of the mind in material world is to keep us always in illusion. That's the only role of mind. Keep us in illusion and to keep us, Prabhupada said in somewhere in Prabhupada, to keep us forever in the material world, basically. You always find a way somehow to keep us forever here. So when you conquer the mind, Super Soul is already reached. How you do that? By accepting spiritual injunctions, basically. It's the only way. Yeah. Because soul. I mean, there is some pleasure in this material world, first of all, before going any further. You get something, but it's so mixed with miseries and endeavor. You know, you basically engage 10%, like, you get 10% out of 100% of endeavor. And it's kind of temporary, you know, you have to do again and again. And that's kind of ignorance is so prevailing that you kind of forget your bad experience. You just do over and over and over. Therefore, devotees have really such a thankless task to remind persons. Sometimes they say we are negative, you know. You have to remind others that life is suffering, you know. You're just forgetting your miseries, over and over. Life after life, chewing, kind of. So we have to convince ourselves first, you know. Everything is nice, yeah. But there's so much danger if you forget, basically, you know. See? That a soul is also aloof completely from sense gratification. That means no amount of sense gratification can reach the soul, basically. It's so aloof, like, for example, I don't know, you're hungry, starving, and you are residing on some island 1 mile away from the shore and asking people to throw you some food there. And they throw after, like, 50 yards, goes in the water. Come on, give me some. So that's the position of the soul. Give me some food. When you will turn face to me? When you will turn face to me? When you will acknowledge me? When? Like, it reminds me of a story in Ramalila with this Shaubari, whatever, who was instructed by her guru to wait for Lord Ram. Her guru, basically, in the time she got instruction, Lord Ram was not even born on this planet. But her guru told her, he's going to appear soon, and I'm old, I'm going to die soon. So you wait for him and make sure, you know, when he comes, you take care of him. So she was waiting all her life and then preparing every day when he will come, when my Lord will come, when he will come, when I will see him. The same way, soul crying, when he will turn face towards me, when you acknowledge me, when. When you do that, that's the happiest moment in your life, basically. So that's a kind of the points. Sorry, I'm kind of. So, also, when you decide to turn toward your soul, as mentioned, what is your happiest day in your life? So, that you already tried so many things in life, and now it's time. Like, for example, imagine you're seeing a quick one. Like, you are kind of tired soul which tried already everything in the material world. And then you're not happy yet, not fulfilled. And you grab the magazine for enjoyment adverts, flipping through the pages, this, that, this, not this, I've done this, I've done this. You throw the magazine, frustrated, you go down the road. You meet stranger, friendly stranger, who tells you, oh, I know what's problem in you. I can help you, I think. And he tells you, go into this dark forest. There is a castle there, fort, forgotten by all, is overgrown the shrubs and creepers. And you have to break the door, go inside, deep down, very bottom of it. I'll give you a torch, no worry, and go down. There is somebody there whom you've forgotten for so long. And then you go there, you go down. And you hear, when you are near, Somebody is there sobbing in some dungeon in the cell there. Is only anyone there? Who is that? Who are you? I'm your soul waiting for you. Remember me? We have been so happy together before. But then you decide to be independent, try to find happiness in this material world. And then you cry, alas, I was such a fool. You know, I locked you there. I just forgot for many lifetimes. In this scenario. So basically, again, go to Bhagavad Gita. That's the basic point. To realize all this, to turn towards the soul. It's the Bhagavad Gita there, basically. To realize that you're not this body, and then you'll conquer all fear, basically. Yeah. Another thing. We have to conquer that, we have to all become sannyasis. Sorry. Principle of sannyasa, this is what I want to mention. Sannyasi means fearless. One who is not fearless cannot be sannyasi. Prabhupada mentioned in Bhagavad Gita, even if he's on dark forest alone, he's not afraid to be alone. It depends on the Lord. So that's kind of principle which everybody on the end we have to take. Sooner or later we can wait, be in our comfort zone, you know, for many lifetimes basically. But comfort zone means to get out from comfort zone means tapasya. You do something for your good, which you don't like. You surrender there. Like, you know, basically whatever you do, it needs tapasya. Otherwise, all human race would be like a bunch of zombies laying around, you know, doing nothing. So anything great, you see, is achieved by some endeavor. The same with spiritual life. It's not so cheap. It's not so easy, basically. So you have to learn to accept challenges. That means get out of comfort zone. So basically, I give you my example, last few months, you know, accepting some challenges which I would never do before. You know, it's just, you know, basically I'm going like a blindfolded through. And I see it's good. You try, basically. You'll see. You'll start, what's happened? You'll start to hear the voice within you. I'm not possessed. Surrender. 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 Surrender, you know, it's like something is there, it's turning your heart basically. Go for it, you know. So, just tell you it works, you know. Some reciprocation is there. That's the point. Otherwise, you can, you know, you can have desire, yes, I want, Krishna, I love you, sitting there like a cabbage basically. Many lifetimes, and when cabbage sitting for long in one place, what happens? It stinks. You know, and then you will be moved away. So, to get out of comfort zone, do a little bit more, something, you know. You know, maybe as a young can be difficult, you have some hope still for your life, but when you crash down after 40, like me, and then it's very helpful. Basically, you kind of bury all your desires down and then, you know, you're reflecting more. Anyway, that's a point, yeah. Also, like, healthy fear is all right, basically, maybe a few minutes. It's not like, you know, you're going to do mad things in name of challenges, like Prabhupada said, to embrace the tiger. Unless you are on the level of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, basically, then you can embrace the tiger. Or touch the snake, you know, something like. I was long ago, actually, I saw one documentary, basically, where somewhere in India, maybe somebody who is from India knows that, there's some village where there is a custom, basically, that any lady who wants to get married, she must kiss the cobra 3 times. And there's a video of that, you know. I was teenage and I watched that. It was crazy. Like, and you see, like, there's a kind of ditch. And yeah, sure enough, there's a cobra there. And there's a bride. She's dressed with the jewelry and everything, sari, and she goes down, and then she comes closer to Cobra, of course. Cobra is ready. And she comes closer and somehow fixates her eyes on the eyes of the Cobra somehow, like, and comes closer and closer, and on maybe 1 foot of distance, she extends her arm, I mean hand, and somehow touches the head of the Cobra on the top between the eyes quickly. And at the same time, quickly, you know, leans forward, kisses the Cobra and backs off because Cobra straight away tried to bite. And 3 times. And this lady passed the test. I don't know, was she happy ever after? But at least husband should appreciate that amount of sacrifice. You know, she could lose a life, basically. And then they said that many girls do not pass the test because Cobra bites you mostly in the neck, this artery here. Poison rushes in split of seconds towards the heart. But the Kano is crazy custom, so they're just in touch of, you know, you don't do such a things. You know, some crazy endeavor, but healthy endeavor, and best with inspiration of devotees and the guidance. That's a kind of austerities and out of comfort zone process we should undertake, basically. So, there's one thing also on the end, what Prabhupada was afraid of. So Srila Prabhupada had sometimes said his greatest fear was that his disciples would fight with one another, causing serious splits in this movement. Therefore, he traveled using his great influence to unite all elements. He had seen how even those to whom he had given great responsibility could again become victims of sense gratification. But he had so. But he had also seen how his being with his disciples strengthened them. So Prabhupada was with his disciples to give them the strength. Otherwise, this movement wouldn't exist. Basically, we had so many fall downs, so many digressions in the past that was basically madness. But those few who are fortunate, they were inspired by Prabhupada, and they still appreciate Srila Prabhupada. It was very inspiring. The other day, to see all this offering to Prabhupada and Vyasa Puja, I was going through some doubts, some devotees now, like exploring the past of ISKCON, and my goodness, I was kind of, some statements contradictory, many fall downs, I was kind of, but this gave me kind of life, that there are still devotees who appreciate Prabhupada, who love Prabhupada, and there's a murti in every center. Why? Because the presence of Prabhupada can give us the strength. That's another thing. So, to get free from fear, we have to take shelter of one who is fearless, or Abai. Srila Prabhupada. I would stop now. There was some point, but this is a never-ending topic anyway. Please, if I say something wrong anyway, whatever it is meant to teach me something, that's all. This was class given to myself, basically. And walk your talk, that's a mission. And more important than that is talk your walk. That means take a role of acharya, basically. Walk your talk and talk your walk. Thank you very much, Hare Krishna. If anyone has something to say, quickly, if you want, or ask, whatever. Anyone? That means we end up here. Srila Prabhupada ki jai.